got my stick. Gotta get on up here. This is my dancing stick. Good morning. Happy anniversary. I am applauding you for making this the best year ever. Yes, I am serious. And it was 1 year ago that I received from Reverend Eliza Bloom Robinson this beautiful stick that has got the Georgia O'Keeffe imprinted on it. And the statement is, I have never had a more beautiful walk. And you know what? That affirmation is so true. I love you, and I have fallen in love with you. You are my community, and I wish you a happy anniversary, because it's not me having the anniversary, it's the we are having an anniversary. So I want to welcome you here. I want you to put your seatbelts on, because we got a morning for you. I'm just saying, get ready, because the plane is going to take off, and there won't be any turbulence, but maybe there will be, just for those that like that. So we want to welcome all of our folks on our Cyber Sanctuary, sending you love. Heidi, who is our Cyber Sanctuary host, good morning. So we have a few more welcomings here today. We have the pleasure of having a guest speaker and musician. I had intended to be away today, and then Spirit changed it up, but made sure that I had a guest speaker in the house and a musician with his lovely partner. And so I'm just going to tell you a little bit about our guest today that we all get to enjoy. Dr. Will Tuttle is a visionary writer, pianist, and composer, and he's presented widely through North America and worldwide. He's the author of the Amazon number one bestseller, The World Peace Diet. I think we're all going to get that. Personally, I will get a copy, as well as five other books. And he is the recipient of the Courage of Conscience Award. He has taught over 20 different courses at the college level, including courses in mythology, philosophy, comparative religion, and creativity. We have a master in the house, just saying. His PhD dissertation in education from the University of California, Berkeley, focused on educating intuition in adults and was nominated for the Best Dissertation Award. Hello. I believe you've been here before, and there's some people that are came back just to see and experience you today. He's a Dharma master in the Zen tradition, done extensive training in Korea, and has practiced meditation for only 45 years. Okay. He studies contemplative Christianity in a variety of non-Western spiritual traditions. He is devoted to planetary awakening through spiritual educations, concerts of critically acclaimed music with only 10 CDs of original music and guided meditations. He travels with his beloved spouse, Madeline, who is a Swiss visionary artist, and they are devoted to promoting healing and awakening through spiritual education and uplifting original piano music, and I'm seeing art in here. And they provide lectures and concerts and just bring their magic. So let's give them a warm Santa Fe welcome. So we have him for the meditation, the talk, the music, and the intuitive workshop that you're all staying for. I don't know if you knew that, but now you do. So now that you've been informed, you know.
So let's become aware of our breathing as we join together in our time of meditation. Every exhalation now, let's just let go to this present moment. Letting go of whatever it took to get here this morning. Entering more deeply this moment, the only holy moment is right now. We give thanks for this precious opportunity to be here in this sanctuary, which is a manifestation of our yearning to awaken to the truth that we are, for the benefit of all beings. We give thanks for everyone who makes this outer sanctuary possible, knowing that this outer sanctuary is a manifestation of the inner sanctuary, where we dwell always in unity with the infinite love that is the source of our life, the source of all life. So we open our hearts to the truth that we are, that we were never born and will never die, that what we are is infinite and eternal consciousness. Abiding in our true home, abiding in loving kindness and compassion and joy and peace, knowing that the light that shines at the heart of the universe is shining in our heart and shining in every cell of our being, bringing every aspect of our life into harmony, into alignment with our purpose. So we open now to the music to connect us more deeply with the purpose of this lifetime, our mission here. Opening to the truth that we are. Abiding in the one life that is the source of our life. We give thanks for this precious opportunity of a human birth, this opportunity to grow in wisdom and compassion and awareness, to contribute to the healing of our world. May all beings be happy. May all beings be at peace. May all beings be free. May we continue to work together to build a more enlightened society, a world that cares for everyone expressions of life. A world that reflects the inner Christ, the truth, and the eternal unity of being. Of all living beings, we give thanks, knowing this is so, and so it is. I'd like to thank you all for joining together in the meditation. It's all taken care of. And I'd like to invite you all to join together now in a piece of original music. This is called Benediction of Light. And I'd like to just dedicate it to the healing of all of our relations and creating a field of healing and peace that we can radiate out into the infinite web of relations. Enjoy. Let the music take you on an inner journey. Enjoy. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you all so much. Thank you very much. It's really an honor to be with you and to be in this beautiful space of love that you've created here in Santa Fe. So thank you for all your efforts. I know that this kind of a community that creates an atmosphere and a space of healing and love takes a lot of work on the individual level. So it's again, it's an honor to be part of the service this morning, and to remember also that we're part of a movement, the Unity Movement, that I think is one of the healthiest movements on our planet, in the sense that it's based on inclusivity, right? There's this basic idea that we do the best we can to see the unity of all life and the unity of the different traditions and of all of humanity and really of all life here. So it was very inspiring already, the first half of the service. Thank you so much, Reverend Liz, for creating the space for this. And when Madeline and I, we actually lived on the road in an RV for 18 years, traveling all over the United States to Unity churches, and we've spoken in churches in every state, except for, what was it? I think North Dakota, they didn't have one. But when they get one, we'll go there. and elsewhere in the world as well. But Unity, I think, like when I was a kid growing up in New England, we were taught that we had the one right religion, you know, and there was a sense that we would get to go to the heaven that was just for us, and too bad for everybody else, you know, that kind of thing. But it's just when I really connected with Unity way back in the early, I guess it was the mid-1970s in Atlanta, I felt like I had found such a precious teaching. You know, it's a teaching that really draws on the deeper threads of Eastern and Western, especially, you know, of course, the Western spiritual traditions. And the underlying idea, of course, is that we all connect with our own inner guidance system, which is intuition, right? Our inner intuition. And Charles and Myrtle Fillmore, the co-founders of Unity, they talked a lot about intuition. In fact, Charles is famous, really, for his saying that he thought that every one of us should go straight to headquarters ourselves. We should go straight to headquarters ourselves. Of course, what that meant for him was, I'll just ask Myrtle, see what she thinks. Rely on the inner feminine intuition. But I, you know, I've been always very interested in intuition for many years. And as we heard earlier, I did my PhD dissertation at Berkeley on educating intuition in adults. And it really is something, I think, that's empowering to connect with our inner guidance system. Because the basic thing is that when we come here, we're born into this society. And there's a great saying by Krishnamurti. He said, it's not a good idea to be well-adjusted to a profoundly sick society. Right? So this is the thing. So we get very well-adjusted. We want to fit in. We want to get along. We want everyone to like us. We're very tribal in that way. But at a certain point, as we awaken, we realize that we can not only just fit in and be part of this, we can actually begin to develop our spirituality, and we can begin to be a positive influence on our society to create more love, peace, freedom, joy, healing, awareness, and so forth. And that does mean questioning many of the underlying assumptions about the nature of reality in our society and the official narratives in our society. And so intuition is really the guidance system for that, because if we're not relying on our intuition, right, what are we relying on to guide us through our life? Why are we living the way we're living? Do we have the goals that we have? Why do we want to have this and that and the other? It's pretty much, if it's not our intuition, it's the cultural program, right? We're bombarded from when we're in the womb, really, but, you know, as soon as we're born, we are conditioned by a massive program. It's not all bad, but there's a lot of good. But just to be aware of that, right? Our parents, our teachers, our friends, our neighbors, our ministers, I mean, the other ministers, not Reverend Liz, you know, the other ministers. they're all just basically putting us in boxes in many ways. We're being conditioned. And if we don't question that conditioning, we can live a life. Right? We can live a life, but actually it will never be a spiritual life, because spirituality does not start until intuition starts kicking in. Otherwise, I'm just following the program, right? I maybe go to church every week. I maybe sing the songs, do this, to be a good person, so forth. But I'm just living the program. And we can go our whole life doing that, unfortunately. But the good news is that each one of us can connect with our inner wisdom, our intuition. And what it means, it doesn't mean that our life will be easy and comfortable. All it means is we'll be living our life, not somebody else's life. It's authenticity. We're living our life authentically. And when we do that, we create just naturally a space around us that encourages others to do the same thing. So we don't have to try to change people and make them better, and the whole world would be great if they were just, everyone was like me, right? No, we just live a life that is authentic ourselves and encourage others to do the same thing in their way. And when we do that, and when we create a community of people who are doing the inner work to understand how that happens and to actually do the inner work, to live authentically and develop our intuition, this inner guidance system, then I think we're creating a community that really has potentially tremendous positive effect, and we're fulfilling a purpose because we're only here for a few short decades. You know, it's really important to remember that. I mean, now I'm starting to realize that. Time goes by really fast. I remember hearing this interview with the oldest living person. They said she was 118 years old, and they said, what's it like being 118 years old? And she thought for a minute, and she just said, being 118 is, it's great, but all I can say is it really went by awfully fast. So it does, even when you're 118. Our life goes by quickly, so let's not fritter it away. Let's really be aware. I remember when I was a kid, I was born and raised in Concord, Massachusetts. And it was a good place to be born and raised in the sense that there was a lot of history there. You know, like on April 19th was Patriots Day, where we celebrated the beginning of the Revolutionary War, the Old North Bridge. I don't know if you remember all that, but it's a big thing back there, April 19th. My father would get dressed up in his Minuteman outfit, get the gun off the wall, and we'd all go down to the Old North Bridge, be thousands of people there. We'd celebrate the Revolution, send the Redcoats back to Boston, you know, and so forth. About 100 years later in Concord, there was another type of revolution, the Transcendentalist Revolution, where we had Thoreau and Emerson. So, you know, Thoreau had the largest library of books on Eastern religion in the entire United States back in the 1840s, on Buddhism and Taoism and Hinduism and Tao Te Ching and Bhagavad Gita, all these things. So I learned to swim in Walden Pond and went to Thoreau School and Alcott School and Emerson Hospital was where I was born. So I think I was maybe somehow picking some of that up. But I remember when I went away to college, I was raised basically to take over my father's business, which he had a whole chain of newspapers. So I was raised in the media. So I learned, actually, don't trust the media. I learned that in my bones. The advertisers, they tell you that, they determine the news. But anyway, I was in college, and I remember starting to question things. It was during the Vietnam War, the early 70s. And I started reading other things. I started reading more what Jesus was saying. Actually, very interesting. I started for the first time really connecting, but also studying some yoga and meditation and different things. And I read a book written by a guy way back in the 1890s named Richard Buck. He wrote a book called Cosmic Consciousness. And it seemed to tie everything together. He said that humanity is destined to attain cosmic consciousness. He said there's been a few individuals so far, like Jesus and the Buddha and some other great men and women, sages and saints and mystics and so forth, through the ages, and he talked about their lives. He said they attained cosmic consciousness. Most people, he said, live at the level of self-consciousness, which is fine. It's basically being concerned about myself and maybe the people around me. But he said certain individuals had attained an intellectual illumination, he called it a moral elevation, and a loss of the fear of death, a spiritual understanding, so that they were really blessing the world. And he said, it is the destiny of all humans to attain cosmic consciousness eventually. And I really, this hit such a deep chord with me, and I remember going back to my parents on break. You know, I was up in Maine, and they were in Massachusetts, and I said, Dad, Mom, you know all about cosmic consciousness, right? That's why we're here. We're not just here to just get a bunch of money and try to have a better house and, you know, all this. That's just baloney, really. We were here for cosmic consciousness. My father said, you know, we're paying a lot of money for this education, and I'm not sure how that's going to help you get ahead in the world. So we had quite a few conversations about these things, but it was interesting. He was actually somewhat open. He taught me to play the piano. I mean, he couldn't, you know, he was a great pianist. But to my delight, my younger brother, Ed, I talked to him, and he said, yes, that's it. We really need to do this. We got to attain cosmic consciousness. So I graduated from Colby, and right after that, we were thinking about what do we do, you know, to attain cosmic consciousness. This is really what we got to do. And we thought about it, and then suddenly we knew what to do, exactly what to do. We were going to just do it. We're going to go to California. You know that. This is 1975. We go to California, go to San Francisco. I mean, for sure, we'll find cosmic consciousness. So I remember we headed down the driveway of our house with some fresh baked cookies from my mother, and we walked and we walked and we walked and we walked, and we finally got as far as Buffalo. And in Buffalo, it was October, it was already freezing. I remember thinking, gosh, you know, I have a bachelor's degree from a good school. It's October, you're in Buffalo. We better head south. So we walked, and we just walked, actually, with no money for quite a few months. It was really an amazing adventure down through upstate New York, Pennsylvania, West Virginia, Kentucky, Tennessee. When we got into Tennessee, we ended up for a while at a community called The Farm. And The Farm in 1975 was the largest hippie commune in the world. And they were all from California, you know. So and so we were there. And so they were all vegetarians. So that was it. I have never eaten meat in my life since being at The Farm, 1975. And I found out years later, Madeline, the same month and year, also became a vegetarian in 1975, never ate meat either. I ended up in a Zen center in Alabama eventually. You probably think I'm lying, but there actually was a Zen center in Huntsville. And then eventually got out to California. I lived in all these meditation centers, Tibetan and Zen, and eventually was a Zen monk in Korea, shaved my head and did a lot of sitting and so forth. And through the whole thing, essentially, discovered really the sense, I think, that we can all connect with, which is on one level that I realized my mind had been colonized. Essentially, I'd been born into a society, it had been sort of taken over, but that through the effort of just bringing the mind back, working with the mind, we can develop the capacity to be present, and we can begin to glimpse the infinite sky that is always present beyond the clouds of our normal conditioned consciousness, which is usually always there. But by quieting the mind, we can get glimpses of the eternal consciousness that we are, that is activating this physical body. It's really important to understand clearly that we are not this body. We are what makes this possible. If you go to a beach and you see some footprints in the sand, you don't go up to the footprint and go, well, good morning, George, how are you today? You know, you're looking kind of shallow. You know, it's just a footprint, right? So right now, this is a footprint waving. You don't see the being. We don't see the being is, if you look but behind the eyes, maybe you can connect with the being. But this is the thing, when we understand this and we connect with the being that we are, then we find that we begin healing. Because from this consciousness of being the eternal life that makes this possible, we can heal anything. And then when we see other beings, we can begin to see the same in them. And we begin to be healers without trying to be healers. We just see the best. We see the truth in other beings, in humans, and even in animals, in all expressions of life. And this is, I think, the greatest gift really we can give is the inner work to understand our true nature, and then see that in others, and then plant the seeds as we go through our life of loving kindness and compassion, because we're all working with the suffering, with the wounds that we've been inflicted with growing up here. Is there anyone in this room who has never suffered? Raise your hand if you've never suffered. Right? We know. So when we understand that, we see that everyone we meet has issues. And we can be a force for healing and compassion and kindness for them as we do this inner work and work together and cooperate. So I'll just close with this idea that we connect with our intuition, our inner wisdom, and then we can connect with what in Buddhism is referred to as the three jewels. The three jewels in the Buddhist tradition are the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. So the Buddha essentially is the inner Christ, you could say, our true nature that is eternal. The Dharma is the teaching, right, that helps us to awaken to this. And this is what we have here, the teaching. The precious teaching. It's so important that every generation activate the teaching, not just by reading it, by living it so we can pass it on. This is critical. And the Buddha said, the third jewel is the Sangha. And the Sangha is the community of those who are dedicated to awakening to the teaching and awakening to the truth of their true being for the benefit of all. And the Buddha said, without the Sangha, there will never be any Buddha or any Dharma. So the Sangha is really the key in many ways. It's how we create community from our enlightenment and from our awakening. We make the effort, but we also contribute to it. So we feed each other. We're not here alone. We're here in community. And that's inescapable. But the good news is we can, each one of us as individuals, have the power to have our consciousness be stabilized as a foundation of awareness and freedom and loving kindness through our intuition and our inner wisdom. So thank you all so much for the efforts you're making, and I look forward to seeing you later this afternoon. Much love to all of you, and keep up the fantastic work you're doing. Bless you all. Thank you very much. Thank you. Go forth and multiply the message. Thank you. Thank you. Oh, I'm going to play a very short piece of music just to kind of wrap this up, and then I'll turn it over. Thank you. This will be a piece called Dance for the Arctic Moon. In the of the four directions, as you know, the north is the direction of going within. The moon represents the sacred feminine dimension of consciousness, which is really the key. The feminine is the power of receptivity, to open to the higher level. So this is Dance for the Arctic Moon. Enjoy.